Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki,
yeah.
Rantaraj Shrima Bhagavat Sama ki,
yeah.
Giriraj Maharaj ki,
yeah.
Nitai Go Premanande. So tonight we will continue with chapter 83. What is chapter 83 called?
Draupadi meets the queens of Krishna.
Tonight we'll go from verses 20 to 43. And we'll finish the chapter off. Okay. Text number 20. Hearing of this, thousands of kings, expert in shooting arrows and in wielding other weapons, converged from all directions on my father's city, accompanied by their military teachers. My father properly honored each king according to his strength and seniority. When those whose minds were fixed on me took up the bow and arrow, and one by one tried to pierce the target, in the midst of the assembly. Rohini, you want to read that?
Is that for 20?
21.
According to the Acharyas, only those kings who were extremely intent on winning the hand of the princess would even dare to try to shoot the target.
Very good. Any points there?
We want to be successful, we have to be determined.
Very good. Any other points? Chapter 83, text 21. Anything else? So this is, the Bhagavatam teaches us both things. It teaches us about Krishna, and it teaches us about Maya. Bhagavatam says in the very first verse, one of the purposes of the Bhagavatam is to differentiate between reality and illusion. What is real and what is false. So the Bhagavatam explains both. So you see, there is a description of Krishna's pastimes, which is reality. But then it gives us the opposite, so that we can understand what both mean, what we should and should not focus on. Yeah. So the kings, the Kshatriyas are in a mixture between goodness and passion. Right? Rajaguna is very powerful in the Kshatriyas. They're very passionate. And passion, or Rajagun, is the most overriding quality of the material world. And it's the main quality which everyone is affected by, the mode of passion. Passion, as we discussed, was it last night? We're talking about the different modes? Yeah. What is the main quality of passion? Yeah, it breeds unlimited desires. Desires just continue and continue. Right? You'll never satisfy your material desires. You never get to the point where you think, oh, that's enough. There'll always be a desire for more and more and more. You see, wealthy people, they just want more and more and more. They don't stop. I mean, someone has $1 billion, they don't have to keep working, but they just keep going and going. Another billion and another billion like that. That's the mentality. So they were so determined to get Lakshmana as a bride. And this is what happens when someone becomes attached to something. Attachment is the driving force of activity. Now, we're attached to certain things. That's what makes us move. Otherwise, we're inert. We won't do anything. But when you're attached to something, then you'll do anything to achieve it. So in the material world, unfortunately, because of our false ego, we become attached to the wrong things. And because we're attached to those things, then we'll do anything to achieve those things. Now, so if we take that same spirit and apply it to Krishna, then we can become Krishna conscious. Just like there is the example of Bilva Mangala Thakur. So you know the example when he was trying to reach the prostitute. Now, what was the name of the prostitute? Chintamani. So then he tried to reach her. And in order to reach her, it's not like these days, you just get an Uber. You know, you just get an Uber and say, take me to, you know, the prostitute or wherever you're going. He had to go over a river in the night, and the, what do they call the people who do the boats?
Boatman.
The boatman, very good. Thank you so much. Is that Sanskrit or Hindi or? So the boatmen, they had gone to take rest, so it was nighttime. So he jumped across. He jumped in the river and swam across the river in the middle of the night. And then it says at one point, he was struggling. So a log went past, so he grabbed the log. But the log was a dead body. You know, in India, sometimes they throw the dead bodies in the river. So he grabbed on the dead body, using it to swim across, right? And then gets across, and then gets to Chintamani's place, and it was raining heavily. And then he jumps over the wall and then gets to her house and he has to climb up and then he goes to grab onto a vine and the vine's a snake. And then he lets go of the vine and then finally crawls up and gets there, taps on her window, you know. And she thinks, you know, who is this? So she opens, you know, who is that? Oh, it's you. What are you doing here? I just wanted to see you. You know, I had so much lust, so much desire, I had to see you. And she said to him, she said, if you had this much desire to see Krishna, you would be a pure devotee. Yeah? So at that point, from that instruction, it reawoke in his bhakti from his previous life. And he left and then he became very serious. And then it said that he began to walk to Vrindavan. So on the way to Vrindavan, we know the story. Then he saw the wife of the Brahmana, right? And she was very beautiful. So then when he saw her, then he followed her, and then she said to her husband, the brother said, you know, there's a man following me. So he went out and he said, can I help you? Said, I'm attracted to your wife. And then the Brahmana said, then this is my duty, you're asking, then you can enjoy with my wife. So then when he came to the Brahmana's wife, and then he realized his mistake. I'm so close to Krishna and then I've again fallen away from Krishna. So he took the pins, he said, give me the pins from your hands. He took out the pins, he took them, he poked them in his eyes. So these eyes are the cause of my bondage. So he made himself blind. And then he made it to Vrindavan. I got to Vrindavan. And then he became the famous poet. Bilva Mangala Thakur, and we have the Krishna Kanamrita and famous books by him. So this is the point. The point is you will do anything to fulfill your material desires. So if we put that same focus and attention on Krishna, we can become a pure devotee. So we have to make Krishna the object of attachment. What drives us to move? What makes us active? Attachment. When you're attached to something, you become enthusiastic and determined to achieve the thing. So we have to become attached to Krishna, to the Guru, to the Vaishnavas, to service to Krishna. And then by becoming attached, then that will drive us to Krishna. If you're not attached to Krishna or the Guru or the devotees, then you won't have the impetus. So you have to become attached. Asakti. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. So either you see here, the Bhagavatam is teaching us, they all were attached to a woman. So they became so enthusiastic and determined. But if that same attachment gets pointed back towards Krishna, then we become liberated from the material energy. Any points? Okay. Some of them picked up the bow, but could not string it, and so they threw it aside in frustration. Some managed to pull the bowstring toward the tip of the bow, only to have the bow spring back and knock them to the ground. So that's the nature of the material world. The material world will. Throw you to the ground. That's the material world. You'll get smashed again and again and again. Just like they tried to string this bow. The bow is very powerful. So even to lift it was very difficult. And to bend it back so you could put the string, right? And then to pick it and then to... Very difficult. So many of them, they could not even pull it back enough to put the string on it. It was such a powerful bow. The bow threw them, tossed them to the ground. That's the material energy. We try so hard to achieve something in the material world, and then what happens? We get thrown to the ground, humiliated, again and again, lifetime after lifetime. Even in this lifetime, so many times. How many times have you been thrown by the bow? Too many times, and still you try to enjoy, separate from Krishna. That's the power of the material energy. Get a point?
I read a quote by Raghunath Swami recently, which said that being humble or humility is actually being realistic about our own qualification. So it feels like they're resulting in humiliation because of the fact that they don't know how qualified they are in the situation.
What do you mean?
Well, they don't have the qualifications to execute what they're attempting.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. So, the material world will destroy our ego. And that's also the advantage of associating with advanced devotees. What will advanced devotees do? They will destroy your false ego. They will give you instructions and make you feel unqualified. Because that is our position. Our position is patita. Patita means?
Fallen.
Yeah. When you realize you are patita, then you are qualified. But if you don't understand you are fallen, you are not qualified. As soon as you understand you are qualified, that is a qualification. That is favorable for bhakti. If you don't understand that you are unqualified, then that is a disqualification in the bhakti. So the material energy will do it for you. Advanced devotees will do it for you. Krishna will work through the material energy and the devotees to bring us to a humble position. But the humble position is desirable because that will make you surrender to Krishna. Any points? A few heroes, namely Jarasandha, Shishupal, Bhima, Duryodhan, Karna, and the king of Ambashta, succeeded in stringing the bow, but none of them could find the target. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu, can you please read the purport?
These kings were very strong physically, but they were not skillful enough to find the target.
Very good. What is the point there?
Mere strength is not enough, skill is also enough.
What's that?
Just having strength is not enough. Skill is also required.
Yeah. Good point. Anything else?
Ishavashyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatam jagat. It mentions like everything is considered as a quota.
Mm.
So even in this, like you can see Karna and all those people were best of the women's, but still they could not, probably they could have pierced the target, but because it was not meant for them, so they couldn't do it.
Mm. Anything else?
Krishna endows us with whatever skills we need to have get our quota, not more, to serve Him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so the point is that we must remain humble before Krishna. If Krishna does not give us the ability, we cannot perform the activity. It says that when the guru gives an instruction, he also gives the ability to fulfill the instruction. But only if he gives the ability, only if Krishna gives the blessings. So we have to understand what is within our means and what is not within our means. It's only if Krishna gives you the potency, then you can fulfill the activity. So these were the greatest warriors in history, actually. You know, Karna was, you know, unbelievably powerful, but he could not do it. Only Krishna can do something, or if Krishna empowers the person, then he can do it. That's why it's pure devotees are sometimes called Shakyavesh avatars. Shakyavesh means a jiva who is empowered to do something as if God Himself were doing it. If Krishna gives you the power, then you can do things as if He Himself were doing it. That is the potency. So a pure devotee has that potency on behalf of Krishna, and then he can do the things. Otherwise, it's not possible to do. Then Arjuna looked at the reflection of the fish in the water and determined its position. When he carefully shot his arrow at it, however, he did not pierce the target, but merely grazed it. Jogi.
According to the explanation of Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was more expert a marksman than the other kings, but his physical strength was not adequate to the task of shooting it with perfect accuracy.
So, any points?
I thought I only heard that Arjuna did shoot the target and basically got it, which is what basically we've heard over the years.
Different Swayambhara.
Acha.
Yeah, that was when he was competing for Draupadi.
Right.
Yeah. The competition was almost the same. This one was a little more difficult than the other one. So yeah, he could do it with Draupadi, but he couldn't do it with Lakshmana. So, any other point? So unless Krishna gives you his grace, then it does not become possible. Arjuna could do it when Krishna gave him the ability, but he could not do it when Krishna did not. Sometimes Krishna wants us to fail. Why?
So we remain humble.
Yeah, so we develop humility. Otherwise, we're not very humble. So unless Krishna makes you humble, then you can't develop that quality properly. So sometimes you have to fail. That's part of Krishna's plan. You know, it's not that we'll always succeed in devotional service. Sometimes failure has to be there, because it makes you humble in Krishna's service. And humble is one of the prerequisites for performing devotional service, doing devotional service for Krishna. So therefore, Arjuna is failing this time. The previous time, he did not fail. So it's all up to Krishna, what he wants. But the difference is, in this pastime, when Krishna succeeded, the devotees were not envious of him. Even though Arjuna could not do it, but he was not envious, he was happy. Because he understood this was Krishna's desire. A devotee always wants to see others successful, more than himself. If others are successful, then he becomes satisfied. Any points? After all the arrogant kings had given up, their pride broken, the Supreme Personality of Godhead picked up the bow, easily strung it, and then fixed his arrow upon it. As the sun stood in the constellation Abhijit, he looked at the fish in the water only once and then pierced it with the arrow, knocking it to the ground. Rasik.
Each day the sun passes once through the lunar constellation Abhijit, marking the period more auspicious for victory. As pointed out by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, on this particular day, the Muhurta of Abhijit coincided with high noon, further emphasizing Lord Krishna's greatness by making the target all the more difficult to see.
What were the points?
When the Lord comes, like everything becomes auspicious.
Anything else?
Krishna's distinction.
Distinction?
Yes, what they couldn't accomplish, he's doing it at the hardest point in time.
And Sita Swayamvara, Sita Swayamvara, Lord Ram broke the bow.
Of Shiva. Krishna also did that. Yeah, Mathura. He also did that. Any other point? So, we should simply become an assistant of Krishna. Ultimately, only Krishna can achieve all of these things. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, I am a gardener, and I have so many fruits in this garden, the garden of love of Godhead, right? And there are so many fruits in the garden. And Lord Chaitanya says, I'm only one person. So how much work can one person do in a big garden? He said, therefore I need assistance. Can you please help me pick the fruits and distribute the fruits of love of Godhead? So that is the position of Krishna. Krishna is, or in the form of Lord Chaitanya, he is requesting the assistance of the jivas. He doesn't actually need assistance. I mean, technically, the Lord can achieve anything he desires, but he gives us the opportunity. Just like I was saying in the class this morning. You know, one time Prabhupada was in Mayapur and he's watching a slideshow with the devotees of Mayapur, and then a slide of Bhaktivinoda Thakur came up. And then one devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you've done even more than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur could have delivered the entire universe, but he was very kind and he left us some service to do. So if Krishna empowers the devotee can do anything. And Krishna himself ultimately can do anything, but he allows us to assist him. That is his mercy. So we can all become assistants. That is our position, actually. Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamaliyo Dasa Dasa Anu Dasa. We are simply the assistants of the assistants. Each one of us has superiors that we answer to, and we simply assist them in devotional service. And that is how a devotee becomes glorious. Krishna ordered Arjuna on the battlefield. He said, you fight, you will take the credit. So if we fight on behalf of Krishna, then we'll take some credit. Otherwise, we cannot achieve anything by ourselves. If Krishna withdraws his mercy, we become powerless. If we surrender to Krishna, we get so much ability. to say. Any points?
Lord says, I'm the ability in man.
Yeah.
In Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
The ability in man.
Yeah. And woman. Kettle drums resound in the sky and the earth, people, and on the earth, people shouted, Jai, Jai. Overjoyed, demigods showered flowers. We don't see this anymore. Yeah, when's the last time you saw flowers coming from? You don't see it anymore. But in Krishna's time, it would happen. Flowers would come. Imagine how amazing that would be. Flowers falling from the sky. We don't see these things anymore. And kettle drums, like the sound of rumbling clouds all around in the sky, that's very auspicious. It says that if there's no rain, but the clouds are making like a light rumbling sound, that's very auspicious. That's like a blessing. So in Krishna's time, these things were taking place. Sometimes inauspicious things would happen also. Sometimes describes in the Vedas that, you know, blood would come from the sky, or pus, or, you know, inauspicious things would come. That's very inauspicious. One time, one devotee was going on a morning walk with Prabhupada. You know, he was saying, they were discussing, and devotee saying, oh, this and that. And then devotee said, but Prabhupada, what if, you know, blood and pus come from the sky? And Prabhupada said, you are expecting? Very inauspicious. You don't see it in Kali Yuga. You know, either just rains at strange times, rains too much or too little, or all these things. But previously, you know, extra things would happen. You know, the flowers would come, or the blood would come, or something like that. Just then I walked onto the ceremonial ground, the ankle bells on my feet gently tinkling. I was wearing new garments of the finest silk tied with a belt, and I carried a brilliant necklace fashioned of gold and jewels. There was a shy smile on my face and a wreath of flowers in my hair. So, what of a wonderful.
Sri Sridhar Swami states that Sri Lakshmana was so excited by remembering how she obtained the Supreme Lord that she forgot her natural shyness and went on to describe her own dream.
Any points? So it describes when we had the pastime of Krishna with the gopis. I remember it's maybe a couple of years ago now. We just studied Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, the Rasa Lila. Then it is described there that the gopis' shyness was stolen by Krishna. So here also, one of the queens, that the nature of womanhood, auspicious womanhood, is that the women remain shy, or you could say chaste. When they are chaste, that is considered to be auspicious. And it makes the woman powerful. Prabhupada says that he was in India before he came to America. And then there was a group of men, and they're obviously wealthy businessmen or something, and they were talking. And then one cleaner, one lady, she was a cleaner wearing her sari. And so, you know, in India, even to this day, people are very conscientious of classes. But because she covered herself very chastely and she came towards them, because she wanted to pass through where they were, they all moved. And Prabhupada said, that is the power of chastity. Right? Even though she was considered very low class compared to them, they would have thought of her like that. But by her chastity, she moved all of them. So that's the quality of the woman. If the women are chaste, it's very auspicious. If they're not chaste, it's inauspicious. And in this modern age, they're encouraged not to be chaste. Right? And that's inauspicious. But Krishna is so powerful, even the most chaste women, he destroys their chastity or their shyness. When we remember when we studied the Rasa dance, so there are four things that he took from the gopis. Do you remember?
One was shyness.
One was shyness? Oh yeah, that's right.
Fear.
Fear?
Family attachment.
Family attachment? Hmm. Dharma.
Dharma.
Dharma and Dharma.
Yeah. Yeah. These are four different things that he stole from the gopis. That was Krishna's potency. Probably would have been 29, 30, 31, one of those chapters. So this is the power of Krishna's potency. Right? Completely take even the most auspicious qualities. But if Krishna wants something, then it is not possible to resist him. That is the point. So here Lakshmana, she was the same. Right? She could not maintain shyness in front of him. Any points? Okay. I lifted my face, which was encircled by the abundant my abundant locks and effulgent from the glow of my earrings, reflected from my cheeks. Smiling coolly, I glanced about. Then, looking around at all the kings, I slowly placed the necklace on the shoulders of Murari, who had captured my heart. Just then, there were loud sounds of conch shells and mridanga, pataha, bheri, and anarka drums, as well as other instruments. Men and women began to dance, and singers began to sing. The leading kings there could not tolerate my having chosen the supreme personality of Godhead. O Draupadi, burning with lust, they became quarrelsome. So, Leela Mai, you like to read them?
Srila Swami comments that the contamination of lust led the kings to quarrel foolishly with the Lord even after seeing his supreme power.
So, any points?
Intelligence is lust. When lust comes up, intelligence is lust.
Yeah. Which verse is that? Anjayato vishayan pumsa. Sangat.
Kamat.
Yeah. Those verses describe. Sangas teshu prajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama. Where does calm come from? Where does lust come from? Where does lust come from? No, but if you are speaking in that verse of the Gita, where does it come from? Where does lust come from?
Senses, mind,
yeah, but.
Desire.
Sangat sanjayate karma. Yeah, it says by Sangha. Sanghas Keshupajayate Sangat Sanjayate Karma. Prabhupada explains this. Krishna is explaining it. Right? From Sangha. Sangha means the association you keep. Right? If you keep the wrong association, karma, lust will, material desires develop. Right? That's the danger of the internet. Right? Everywhere, it's everywhere now, but the internet just makes it much more dangerous now. Right? Because you get material association anytime, any place. Right? And it disturbs the consciousness. That association develops material desires. Spiritual association gives you spiritual desires. So it depends who you associate with more. Associate with material nature, you will develop material desires. You associate with spiritual nature, you will develop spiritual desires. Right? So it's all dependent on the association that we keep. So they were so lusty, even though Krishna just did something they could not. If you see someone do something you cannot do, especially if you're a kshatriya, a warrior, then the person's more powerful than you. So then why would you attack the person? So their lust was so strong, it bewildered their intelligence. They thought, we can defeat him. But they could not defeat him. And because of that, some of them died, and the others had to run in fear. So lust and envy. If you have any of these bad qualities, you will lose your intelligence. So they lost their intelligence. They lost their ability to think straight. They attacked Krishna, which was a big mistake. Okay. Just then... did I read that? Yeah. 32. The Lord then placed me on his chariot, drawn by four most excellent horses, donning his armor and readying his bow, Shanga. He took on the chariot, and there on the battleground he manifested his four arms. So obviously there was no hope for them to defeat Krishna. But they still wanted to compete with Krishna. In the Ishopanishad, Srila Prabhupada says, we have to learn to cooperate with Krishna. Krishna does not want to dominate us. He does not want to just have us serve him mindlessly. Rather, Krishna wants to have us cooperate with him. He just wants our cooperation, that's all. Just wants devotees to be cooperative, that's all. You know? Krishna, there's no pleasure in controlling someone and just forcing them to serve you. Right? There's no pleasure in that. You must serve me, there's no pleasure. There's a perverted kind of pleasure. That's why people do it in the material world. They control people and make them serve them. But it's not real pleasure. So Krishna does not do that. He wants us to voluntarily serve him. Right? He just wants us to cooperate. Right? And if we do that, then he will give us unlimited reciprocation. But if we try to compete with Krishna, then we will suffer in the material world. So as it says here, that the kings, they wanted to attack Krishna, and then we'll see what happens. Daruka drove the Lord's gold-trimmed chariot as the kings looked on, O queen, like small animals helplessly watching a lion. The kings pursued the Lord like village dogs chasing a lion. Some kings, raising their bows, stationed themselves on the road to stop him as he passed by. These warriors were deluged by arrows shot from the Lord's bow, Shanga. Some of the kings fell on the battlefield with severed arms, legs, and necks. The rest gave up the fight and fled. The Lord of the Yadus then entered his capital city, Kushastali, Dwarka, which is glorified in heaven and on earth. The city was elaborately decorated with flagpoles carrying banners that blocked the sun, and also with splendid archways. As Lord Krishna entered, he appeared like the sun god, entering his abode. So Krishna here is displaying unlimited opulence, unlimited power, and he is also displaying unlimited propensity to enjoy. The Dham is the expansion of Balaram himself. Why does Lord Balaram expand the spiritual world? for Krishna's enjoyment, his pleasure. It is the most perfect abode. So Dwarika is the manifestation of Lord Balaram's desire to serve Krishna, to give him unlimited satisfaction. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Hands up if you like to enjoy. Three people. And everyone starts saying, oh, actually, I really want it. Yeah, cool. That's all we want to do. We just want to enjoy all the time. Hands up if you don't want to work anymore. Yeah, just have holiday all the time. Right? Yeah, we just want to enjoy. We don't want to go to work. Why do you work? Actually, I was listening the other day, very, very intelligent man. Psychologist, quite famous in the world. Very intelligent man. And he was saying that in the late 60s, you know, as Industrial Revolution is progressing, everything, they were predicting that the Western world, the work hours would reduce. And they actually predicted by now we would only be working 15 hours a week, right? Because that's why we have all this technology. And, you know, I mean, everything's so easy now. You know, just use your phone, you can do half your, like, you know, I'm at the farm. Half of my office work I can now do on my phone. And just sit there and just, you know, and sit on the couch, just laying there, just going do, 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 like that. Emails and shooting off, organizing things, doing it. So easy now. The whole point of that was so that we didn't have to work so much. But then the people owning the companies, they thought, no, wait a minute, that's not what we're here for. We're here to make everyone work more so that we can sit back and do that. They can sit back and do practically nothing, and everyone else can work hard for them. So actually the whole system was, there were leaders who were talking about that, reducing the work hours. But actually what's happened is now the other way. Now the work hours are longer. That's not the way it's meant to be. And in the Vedic culture, it wasn't like that. You hear about Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. You know, they get up, they do their morning program, nice breakfast, go ride to the office on a chariot, you know, get to the office, right? Then the entertainment comes out, right? And they watch some entertainment. And then after the entertainment is finished, then they do some work. Then they go and have nice lunch, rest a little, maybe do a little bit more work, then head back home on the chariot, and then enjoy in the evening. That's the system, not this artificial system we have now. So the whole Dharma is just for Krishna's pleasure. It's for his enjoyment. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Why are we Anandamaya Vyasat? The living entity, the Vedas say the living entity is looking for enjoyment. That's why we exist. We just want to have fun and enjoyment all the time. In the material world, you can't do that. But actually, that's what we're meant to do, just enjoy ourselves unlimitedly. So Krishna is just enjoying like that. The whole Dharma is just to satisfy Krishna's desire. And the Dharma which gives him the most pleasure is Vrindavan, even more than Dwarka. It's even more satisfying.
In my company in India, so they have built the offices like a resort, so that people stay in the office, they don't go home. So they have built it like a hotel sort of thing, and if you are tired, you can go and sleep. And if you want to have a swim, you have a swimming pool, you can play and everything. So, but you can stay an extended hours in the office so that you can work more.
Which company is that?
Infosys.
And?
Infosys.
Infosys. Okay. Sounds like a good company. No, it does. That sounds like a good company. Yeah, if you have to work for something, that sounds better. The same as like Google in America. You know, in the cafeteria at lunch, everything's free. You don't have to pay for anything. If you work there, everything's free. You can just eat whatever you want. Right? And they ride skateboards around the hallways. And, you know, so the whole thing's not about just working. It's like, you know, more like enjoying. And then everyone's more productive. And, you know, so it's actually a better idea to do that. My father, honored his friends, family, and in-laws with priceless clothing and jewelry, and with royal beds, thrones, and other furnishings. With devotion, he presented the perfectly complete Lord with a number of maidservants bedecked with precious ornaments. Accompanying these maidservants were guards walking on foot and others riding elephants, chariots, and horses. He also gave the Lord extremely valuable weapons. So the purport points out that, what does Krishna accept? Yeah, our bhakti. And Krishna doesn't need, there's nothing you can give to Krishna, especially in this world, material world, that Krishna needs or wants. There's nothing. Because he has the spiritual energy, the spiritual world. Like here, Prabhupada said, don't give the deities real jewels. Right? Because, you know, someone might hear, oh, in the Hare Krishna temple, you know, they have so many jewels for the deities, and they'll come in and rob the temple. So Prabhupada said, don't give real jewels, give like the artificial ones. Okay. The deities actually do have real jewels. Like that. We also have a safe in the temple where we lock the really valuable stuff. They do have some real. We bring it out on Janmashtami and things like that. But mainly, the jewelry they have is like artificial. They're not real jewels. So we can't offer Krishna anything. You know what? You know, on Janmashtami we give him some nice jewelry, or give Radharani some nice jewelry in Rajasthami. It doesn't mean anything. It's our love and devotion which Krishna is looking for. In the spiritual world, he has real jewels, much more opulent than the jewels that he has in this world. But the kind of devotion Krishna is looking for is ahotiki apratihata. It must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. That's actually the bhakti that Krishna is looking for. Uninterrupted means we serve Krishna all the time, every day. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Right, every day you serve Krishna. Right, we don't have days off. We have days off where we rest a bit, take the kids over to the shopping centre so they can play with all the balls and all those things. And yeah, that's like a day off. But still, even when we're doing that, you know, the consciousness is on Krishna. You have to chant your rounds every day. You have to read and study and listen to lectures every day. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. So uninterrupted and unmotivated. You know? We're not doing things for Krishna because we want something back. That's not the point. We just do it for Krishna because Krishna, it will give him pleasure. That's why we serve Krishna. Not for any other reason. Thus, by renouncing all material association and practicing austere penances, we queens have all become personal maidservants of the self-satisfied Supreme Lord. So 2 points are given here by the queens. The first point is, we have to renounce material association. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to renounce material association. Association which clouds your consciousness and makes you forget Krishna. You have to keep that distant. Asatsanga tyaga e vaishnava nacha. Mahaprabhu says, asatsanga. Right? Materialistic association, tyag, renounce it. Right? Then you can make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right? And the second point is, you have to perform tapasya, tapo divyam. We're discussing that this morning also. Austerity for Krishna's pleasure. Austerity makes one strong in the mind and the body. And actually, this is one of the defects of Kali Yuga. That's why it says in the beginning of the Bhagavad, people are short-lived, ill-advised, unfortunate. And Prabhupada explains in that purport, he said people have too much sense gratification. And when you have too much sense gratification or pleasure, you become weak in the mind and the body. How does the mind and body become strong? Right? By austerity. Right? And then the mind and body become strong. Just like I was listening to another guy who is becoming popular and a bit famous in the world. He's famous for doing austerities. Right? He doesn't do anything beyond the austerities. That's the problem. But he's teaching people. And he's saying that everyone is becoming too soft. You work in an office where the temperature is regulated. You get in your car where the temperature is regulated. You go home and the temperature, you're soft. You just walk from the car to the house and from the house to the car to the tram to the office. So you're weak. That's not the way people were supposed to be. Just like my ashram at the farm, right? How do we keep the house warm? By fire. Yeah, there's no electricity. It's only solar power. You can't put a heater on. So only fire, and it's getting cold. So it means the house is always a little bit cold. Right? Is it good or bad? It's actually good. Right? It makes you strong. That's the problem. Everyone's too weak. Right? Because when everything becomes too comfortable, the mind becomes weaker, and then devotees become so weak. Oh, it's too cold, I can't do everything. Oh, like that. No, go and do it. Hands up if you finish your shower with cold shower every day. You have warm shower and then you finish cold. Hands up if you do that. No one does that, really. I've been doing that every day for the last 30 years. Right. Have warm shower, but at the end, just cold, right? Just wash over the body. Right. Very good for the mind, very good for the health. Very good. Many people are doing that now. Even the non-devotees are doing that now. Right. Because it makes the body strong, makes the mind strong. What?
Yeah. I did cold shower and I became very sick.
Yeah. It's because the body is not warm. It's like, devotees say, like even today one devotee said to me, he said, oh, I'm sick. I am, too cold and winter, like that. What's the opposite of cold?
Warm.
Oh, warm. Yeah, warm. That's the opposite of cold. So if your body is cold, what's the best thing to do? Make it warm. Right? What's the best way to make it warm? Right? You just jump up and down for 3 minutes. Or do push-ups. Or that's what I do. If I'm feeling cold, 3 minutes, right? You can just stand wherever you are anywhere. Do push-ups, star jumps, after 3 minutes, your body's warm, middle of winter. You don't feel cold anymore, right? And if everyone's going, oh, I'm sick, just do something, right? And it changes the whole thing. And then you don't get sick so easily, right? And if you have cold shower, if you finish on cold shower, it makes, it's like, at the farm it was cold the other morning, and my bathroom is also outside. Like, you have to walk outside to get to the bathroom. So it's cold outside in the morning. So you get up early in the morning, go out, it's very cold, go in, have a shower, and then finish cold. And then when you walk out, the cold air doesn't feel so cold. Because you're more cold from being in the the shower. Right? And then you can tolerate. And then everyone's like, oh, it's so cold, it's so good. No, you don't feel like that. No. So austerity makes the mind and body strong. And that's important for devotional service. Right, the mind and body have to be strong in devotional service because it's not easy in this material world. And it makes the mind more determined. Otherwise the mind becomes weak. Right? And if the mind is weak, it's hard to reach Krishna. Right? Is anyone in this room? Did anyone go through the Brahmacharya ashram? Brahmacharya. That's why you're having that cold showers. When I was Brahmacharya, that's what we did. Now I have warm and I finish on cold. But there was a period when I was Brahmachari, just cold the whole time, in winter. Just cold showers. I couldn't do it now. It makes you strong, actually. That's why Brahmachari training is very important. It makes the mind very strong. And then you can become very focused in devotional service. So, any points? No. So what are we doing tomorrow morning, Brinda? Transcendental cold shower key?
Jai.
Jai. Good luck. Send me a text, let me know how it goes. The text will say, like your phone is waterproof. Okay. Rohini Devi, speaking for the other queens, said, after killing Bhaumasura and his followers, the Lord found us in the demon's prison and could understand that we were the daughters of the kings whom Bhauma had defeated during the conquest of earth, of the earth. The Lord set us free, and because we had been constantly meditating upon his lotus feet, the source of liberation from material entanglement, he agreed to marry us, though his every desire is already fulfilled. So Krishna reciprocated with the queens. How many queens were there? 16,000? 100, yeah. 16,100 queens. No one else would marry them, right? If a man steals you in the Vedic culture, no other person can touch you. It's considered you've been like taken by that particular man. So Bhaumasura had taken all the queens. No one would marry them. Krishna, because he knew they were pure devotees and they were attached to him, then he overlooked everything and he gave them shelter. Because bhakti is more important than any material qualification. O saintly lady, we do not desire dominion over the earth, the sovereignty of the King of Heaven, unlimited facility for enjoyment, mystic power, the position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment of the kingdom of God. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kumkum from his consort's bosom. So they mention within the Sanskrit, they mention the position of the goddess of fortune, Sri. But actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says they're referring to Srimati Radharani. They actually want to become followers of Srimati Radharani. It is explained that there was a rivalry or a competition between the queens and the gopis. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary that the queens, they knew that Krishna was more attached to the gopis, so they were transcendentally envious of them. And the gopis were envious of the queens in a transcendental way, because Krishna had gone to Dwarka. And there are verses earlier in the Bhagavatam where they thought that Krishna has now forgotten us and he's become attached to them. So there was a transcendental competition. But these 16,100 queens, they wanted to develop the type of love for Krishna that the gopis had. So they're referring to Srimati Radharani, that we want her mercy, because by her mercy we can become more attached to Krishna. In the final verse, we desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braj, the cowherd boys, and even the aborigine Pulinda women desire, the touch of the dust he leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. So this is the transcendental rivalry, which is that. Jamuna, you want to read the purport?
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti reminds us of the jealous rivalry that always existed between the queens of Dwarka and the gopis of Raja. The gopis considered the sophisticated women of Dwarka the most serious threat to their hold on Sri Krishna, confessing their anxiety to Uddhava. Why should Krishna come back here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies and marrying the daughters of kings? Bhagavata 10.47. Yeah, Rukmini and her seven chief co-wives considered themselves so fortunate in their relationship with Krishna as he appeared in Dwarka that they did not specially desire to see him as he is in Vrindavan. But the 16,000 lesser queens, after hearing Uddhava's described Sri Radha's super excellent qualities, became attracted to touch the dust that falls from Krishna's feet onto the grass and plants of Vrindavana. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur indicates that some commentators give this as the reason why, after the Maushala Leela, these 16,000 queens were stolen from Arjuna on the road by Lord Krishna himself in the disguise of 16,000 cowherds, who then took them away to Gokula.
So what are the points?
These queens were pure devotees in the Bhagavata, and they had the mood to follow in the path of the gopis. In regards to this pastime, Madhavan Prabhu in one of the Govardhan retreat mentioned the queen pastime. He said, once all the queens of Dwarka pleaded to Krishna that they wanted to see, meet Srimati Radharani. And then Krishna, on one of the nights when they were in Kurukshetra, arranged for this to happen. And all the queens were waiting along with Krishna. And then Radharani comes in a palanquin. And when she comes out of the palanquin, she just puts her lotus feet outside. And just her tip of the toe nail was shining so brightly that all of them saw that and fainted. So that was her beauty.
Any other points? Srimati Radharani ki jai.